Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You're scared of things that go boom, boom, boom.
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and I'm here today with Michael Kester.
Oh my god, we are here today, aren't we?
Michael, I have two movies with built-in commercial breaks
for
you.
This is just the best double feature ever, and they're by notable directors?
They are by, one might say, notable directors that double feature likes.
Teen idols in leather jackets?
Wow, yeah, teen idols in leather jackets. We got a 50s thing going on. We have notable vehicles,
This is one of our most carefully constructed double features we've ever done. It came so easily, too.
It's 50s throwback time, and by directors you might not expect that from. We're going to do Road Racers, but before that, we have another film.
Yeah, we're going to do Crybaby.
Now, Road Racers is a Robert Rodriguez film.
Right, which we're not doing. We're doing that one second. We're doing the John Waters film first, which is Crybaby.
And everyone's already confused. We're going to spoil both of those films. The first film we're going to spoil is Crybaby. Uh-huh. There, we fixed it. We fixed the order. Everybody's seen Crybaby. It has Johnny Depp. It's a popular film, I guess. It's a John Waters film. Maybe you haven't
seen it. It's popular for a John Waters film.
However, nobody has seen Road Racers. That's probably not true. Some people have seen Road Racers.
I think very few people have probably seen Road Racers.
Let's try this one. More people have seen Road Racers recently than,
that's
than
definitely
ever
true.
Before.
Definitely true.
So you can actually get both of these movies now. Hooray. Check the films out before you listen to the show, or use the chapters to skip over those.
Or if you're just tired of Robert Rodriguez.
Nobody is ever. I defy you, sir. No one ever grows tired of Robert Rodriguez. Are you tired of Robert Rodriguez?
No, just of tired in general,
not.
I think.
Of course not.
Just tired.
Crybaby is a film from 1990, and it's, of course, John Waters. John Waters hasn't been mentioned on our show in a little while.
In a little while.
I want to talk about the people who are in this.
Okay.
Now, some of them...
You mean the actors?
Yeah.
Okay.
We have... We've mentioned some of these people before.
Yeah.
Casting difference this time is... we're 2 years after Hairspray. This is our first film without Divine.
It is.
Now, almost all of the Waters films we've talked about so far have had Divine in them.
With the exception of what? A Dirty Shame?
Yeah.
And Serial Mom.
You got it. And so this is right after Divine died in 88.
Mm-hmm.
Long enough, I guess, for John Waters to kind of regroup and having lost the... I mean, that's heavy because he started making films with Divine.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not just the person who was in all his films.
Right.
That really... Divine remembers John Waters from a time when John Waters wasn't even really making films.
Yeah.
They grew up, you know, shooting bullshit movies together.
Right.
Little shorts and stuff. They kind of learned how to make films, you know, with each other. And then Divine dies. And now it's time to make another film.
Yeah.
It's weird when you're a filmmaker because, I mean, fucking sucks when anybody dies in
your
life.
Yeah, that's awful. That's a bad time.
But you just kind of get back to what you do. And what you do, in John Waters' case, was the thing he did with the person that died.
Sure.
So part of kind of his, I don't know, mental recovery there is, well, I got to get back to filmmaking. And it becomes interesting to see who he puts in that first film.
Yeah.
And what he makes that first film about. And it falls very much in line with the previous film with Hairspray.
Yeah, it's very similar to Hairspray.
Both dealing with, always dealing with taboos, but dealing with these groups that are factioned apart. The authority figures that enforce that factioning.
Sure, plus it's a period piece.
Sure, you got that.
And Ricky Lake is back.
Very musical. Yeah, Ricky Lake does come back. We talked about Ricky Lake extensively in Hairspray. She had a very big role in that. Patty Hearst, we talked about previously. Patty Hearst showed up more in Serial Mom. Didn't necessarily show up more, but we talked about her more in Serial Mom pretty extensively. Convicted terrorist. Patty Hearst, I should say, if you aren't familiar with Patricia's previous work.
It's terrorism.
Yeah.
And Stockholm Syndrome.
Yeah. I want to say alleged terrorism, but she was actually convicted. So, however, you know, regardless of how you feel about her conviction, that was something. I'm pretty sure she actually did time for it too, didn't she?
That doesn't surprise me.
I know she was let off eventually. Presidential pardon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Crazy. So we talked about that on Serial Mom. We talked about Ricky Lake on Hairspray. Have not talked about Iggy Pop, maybe in, as Ratface and Tank Girl.
I don't think so.
Didn't talk about Iggy Pop. Who the fuck is Iggy Pop?
Iggy Pop is the fucking greatest.
Yeah?
Iggy Pop.
I don't know anything about
Iggy
Pop.
He used to be
Pop.
The front man of the Stooges. Okay. In, the,
what?
Yeah. Did
For
you
real?
Not know that?
No, I
Oh, yeah.
No
Iggy
idea.
Pop is the singer of the Stooges.
What are you talking about?
And then he went solo. The Stooges had like two albums. And
sure.
Then
okay.
Iggy Pop became. It was. Two albums of The Stooges, then Iggy
hits.
Pop and The Stooges, yeah. And then just Iggy
Pop.
Oh,
okay, Iggy Pop and The Stooges. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds familiar now.
But Iggy Pop, he's a notorious rock and roller. I mean, like the type of rock and roller that could eat a bowl of drugs
sure.
in the morning.
Right.
And
that shows up in a John Waters film.
Sure.
John Waters kind of makes these films where he goes, who would it be fun to hang out with?
Exactly.
Oh, this would be really funny. Put this person in the movie.
Yeah, he's notorious for being absolutely insane, for mm-hmm. rocking out way too much to the point where it's sure. scary to be around him on stage.
Yeah.
And for having done every drug ever known to man and looking like a suitcase.
Sure.
These right. are the things that Iggy Pop right. is known for. But he's still around.
He's taking a bath in this in a tub in this
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, he's goofy.
He looks like somebody who does a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
I mean,
oh,
he
yeah.
has this impossibly fucking skinny skeletal
sure.
body, and he's just wired all the time.
But he's a rock and roll giant. I mean,
sure.
he's still... He just came through Chicago not too long with the Stooges. They played at the Aragon.
Ridiculous.
He's still doing it.
Still at it,
man. Can I say that?
Still at it. Tracy Lords also in this film playing Wanda. Tracy Lords, convicted porn star. Well,
convicted porn star.
I just feel like she has convictions.
Oh, okay.
Never convicted, never incarcerated, just a porn star.
Sure.
Made a lot of pornography prior to this film. I think this was actually her first... fictional role. I don't
fictional?
Know.
Fictional. Yeah, no, porn is far more realistic. It's her first.
It's her first film, not porn film.
It's the first time she acted without anything inside of her.
I feel like that might not be true. Man.
That's true. That
might,
that's
she
a
did
gross,
a lot of movies before this. You look at her IMDb,
she didn't get naked in this film.
Okay, there you go. That might not. You know, pornography is a weird thing.
Pornography is a weird thing.
Doesn't even require you to be naked.
Spanking site.
I don't know anything
Who
about that.
Who else is in this film?
Kim McGuire is in this film.
Oh,
Kim
yeah.
McGuire is Hatchet Face. She's in this film as Hatchet Face, and she is in very little else, which is par for the course and for a lot of the actors
yeah.
that show up in John Waters stuff.
So I know you're terrified of her.
She is insane looking.
I think a lot of things about Kim McGuire. I have a very confused opinion about her. But one thing that I can definitely swing in is that she was there to be divine.
Yeah.
I can't tell you whether or not I'm afraid of her,
sure.
and I can't tell you whether or not the makeup job was intentionally a horrible
sure.
disservice to her.
Sure. Well, they write a lot into this. I mean, think about her character's name.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the
yeah.
script focuses on a horse runs away from her.
She's
or
a 3D monster.
I'm sorry, a cow.
Yeah,
right. She and then seeing her play in a band is even more terrifying.
Yeah, but she's a hell of a saxophone player.
She is.
Because everybody's doing all their own singing and performing in this film, right?
No.
Oh,
no,
my
definitely
bad.
Definitely not. Actually, no one is doing... I don't even know if they're doing their own dancing at this point. No, they're probably doing their own dancing. She's got this kind of Harvey Dent animated series makeup going
wow.
on there. It's just... Well,
wow.
you know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
The sort of lipstick
sure.
circle over this... Ah, terrifying. I mean, if the objective here in a John Waters film is to have one-of-a-kind actors, she certainly achieved achieved that. I wouldn't have it any other way, but you're right. It does, in the divine-shaped hole left in this in these films, this is one of the oddities we're bringing to the collection in hopes of still creating outlandish material. And you know what? You saw Divine's roles getting a little more... I mean, when we talked about polyester... There was kind of taking the backseat a little more
sure.
normalized.
She ate less bodily waste as the films went on.
And then there was Hairspray, and Hairspray, almost a second-tier character,
yeah.
a supporting role,
mm-hmm.
playing a parent and, you know, thinking back, playing the station owner or whatever. Not even in drag, not even cross-dressing in that
right.
part. Still looking and acting just
yeah.
as weird, but, you know, what are you going to do? A weirdest role in a John Waters film always goes to the person with the least weird role or the most notable actor, because you look at the collection of carnies.
Sure.
And then you look at the, you know, people who grew up in the alleys of Baltimore suburbs, if there is such a place. And then you look at Johnny Depp.
Johnny fucking Depp is in Crybaby.
You go, Johnny Depp, how did you get here? Are you lost?
Yeah,
you,
it's a weird...
Let's get your map out and figure out what Hollywood movie you were trying to drive
you
to.
You can go back and look at every John Waters film.
Mm-hmm.
You can take the combined fame of every other actor in a John Waters film, and you barely make it to Johnny Depp's ankles.
Yeah, Johnny Depp gets paid more than the budget of this film to be in a Pirates movie.
Ten times over.
It's crazy, his level of stardom. It's probably hard to find, you know, you could collect actors from any group of movies and probably not reach the stardom of Johnny Depp. But seeing him in a John Waters movie
It's one of those, it's bizarre. But, I mean, it's great.
Even when Hairspray comes back around and John Travolta is in the remake of the stage version of Hairspray, it still isn't as weird as Johnny Depp. So I always heard, and I don't know if you know if this is true or not, that he took this role at the time because he didn't want to be typecast.
I've heard the same thing, actually, yeah.
He was doing, what was the name of the TV show?
21 Jump Street?
Yeah, it was a teen TV show. I actually don't know a lot about that.
Do you
know
what that was? It was a teen drama.
Sure.
I guess dramedy.
Okay.
Along the lines of 90210.
Okay, sure.
Probably for younger people.
And that was around the Killapalooza time?
Yeah, it was right around Killapalooza. What was that, number two?
Yeah, so what was he in?
He was in Nightmare on Elm Street.
You got it.
Because all famous actors start in a slasher film.
Sure. And, you know, in Nightmare on Elm Street, it wasn't the bizarre thing that it is in Crybaby.
Oh, yeah. Not at all.
It wasn't, oh my God, Johnny Depp, he's so weird in this role.
Right.
You know, what is he doing here? Crybaby, it's like he's weird and then they make the role even more awkward. Mm-hmm. Just so it's, you want it to be more bizarre when you show up to see it than it is on the one sheet.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know how much truth there is to that, but probably it's not something to be highly skeptical of. A lot of teen actors do that.
Oh, yeah.
Look at popular, I mean, the Harry Potter kids all started acting in bizarre stuff left and right.
Sure, they all spun out. Although, I will say, and maybe we'll get it on the show at some point, but The Woman in Black, that Hammer Horror Daniel Radcliffe joint.
Oh, I don't even know about that.
So good.
Oh, man, I don't even know about that.
Such a good... I was so happy.
Is it weird, though? Is it making my point?
Yeah, well, because he... Okay, so the thing is he's supposed to be an adult, you know?
Sure,
he's supposed to be a grown-up. He's a father. But to me, he's always going to be an 11-year-old kid.
Sure. Well, that's what he's trying to avoid. He's got a huge franchise under his belt.
Sure. And that's, I mean, and that's what Johnny Depp, I guess, was going for with Crybaby. And it's a weird role because it's still such a, it's all about delinquents and being a juvenile.
Sure.
But it's, you know, there's a lot of adult themes and it's, you know, it's the tame version of an adult themed film.
Sure.
It's not Dirty Shame.
Right.
But it still surpasses probably a lot of what was coming out then.
Yeah, when you look at the more mainstream or more the John Waters films that got a little bit more public attention, those tend to be some of my favorites because of the Trojan horse element.
Yeah, the subversion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're taking something like this that looks glossy and friendly, and who doesn't love Crybaby?
Oh, yeah, no, it's...
It's as if you could show Crybaby to a class of high school kids
and totally
everyone
could.
Would sign off on it. You know what I mean? But we're still getting in the same ideas as usual. You know, as we're talking about this, I'm thinking all the kids from that fucking vampire franchise, too.
Yeah.
Same thing. Branching out, doing pretty much just what is the weirdest thing I can find.
Oliver Twist with parkour is the weirdest thing that you will see any of them in the next 2 years.
And, you know, because then people will look at that and go, oh, he was in that fucked up movie. It doesn't even matter what's in the movie.
Sure.
Oh, he was in that fucked up role in that fucked up
movie. So you're saying if I were a sparkly vampire and I wanted to get away from that, I should team up with, say, David Cronenberg?
Allison has a great lounge. I'm just going to ignore you. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
No,
you precisely hit on my point. Who's the weirdest director? Hey, Cronenberg. Hey, you want to make some of your really old stuff that's freaking everybody out?
Yeah, some sci-fi.
Let's do that. There's a great jazz lounge scene, which I used to be constantly on the hunt for and still am, doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. This isn't so much at a jazz lounge as, a fancy ball or something.
I think it's at like a box
swell
social.
Party.
It's a swell party.
They're at a swell party, but man, you got the fucking, the jazz backdrop, just like I like it. You got the red curtain and the blue backlight, and I can just pretend that on the other side, there isn't a bunch of people eating wedding cake or
it's
whatever
a bunch of people in
doing.
Dark tables smoking. And yeah, then when the camera pans back, it's Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah, that's why we've paired it with Road Racers. We've done it so you can turn around and it's
smoking.
Yeah, just a bunch of people smoking and you turn back and there's your red velvet. It's beautiful. No, you turn back around and there's an awkward makeout montage. That's what happens. That's the metaphor for John Waters here. There is actually an awkward makeout montage.
A lot of the things that I like about Crybaby deal with the coupling within the film.
Sure.
I know it's kind of a weird element to pick out.
No,
as
not
a theme,
at all, man.
But Crybaby is so much about coupling.
Sure.
There's no single character.
Mm.
Even the single characters are absolutely. There's what's her name? Lorna or Laura or whatever. The one who claims to have Crybaby's child.
Yeah, right.
She's this weird anomaly that is just a wrench. And then there's the blonde, the porn star.
Sure.
Her character. She has a bunch of different guys. And that's basically the way to illustrate that she's single.
Right.
You know what I mean? But everybody else pairs up. Even the kids get paired up. I feel like
Wanda always has someone in the particular scene in the moment.
Right, you know? Exactly. And it's all about coupling. And I think a lot of that is supposed to be motivation for when they get separated and he goes to prison. I feel like it's such a driving force when everybody's been in pairs and then your two leads can't have a pair. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes that whole arc seem really magnetic.
Everybody else has somebody except these two people. You don't have anybody.
The ones who you feel like really deserve it.
Sure.
Because Hatchet Face, you're just like, fortunately for you, but honestly, come on.
Right.
And
even Hatchet Face has someone. Yeah. How could these two?
In a world where.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's, we're still getting a little bit of the racial tension from Hairspray. Oh, yeah. But
they send all the black people to prison on a chicken wire truck.
Sure. All right. We're getting a lot of the racial tension from Hairspray. But I mean, as the driving force of the film, it's about these groups that have been kind of segmented off.
Sure.
And it's interesting here compared to Hairspray because it's an artificial construct.
Right.
It's these two groups that, maybe we're getting over racial tension. But now we've actually just formed separate factions for people to belong to go to war with each other.
Right. Well, and it's a lot like Dirty Shame with the neuters and the sex addicts or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
But the thing that John Waters does, and I love him for it, is when somebody is a square, which to my knowledge, that was what cool hep cats called lame people back in the 50s.
Sure. That's still kind of it here, don't you think?
But the squares are proud. Right. I'm a square and I'm proud. You know, back to Dirty Shame. I'm a neuter and I'm okay with it.
Yeah, right.
I love that.
It's high society.
There's this pride in being this variant sect of humanity.
Right, right. Yeah, it reminds me a little bit. It's sort of a Romeo and Juliet thing.
Yeah,
it's the family pride there. Definitely the lovers and the two factions.
Yeah.
But here they have social taboos to overcome. And kind of the idea of growing up and wondering what your parents will think. The parents also couples through this whole movie.
Well, the parents were both all dead.
Of the the two protagonists. But they don't have each other and they don't even have parents.
Right.
But, you see everybody else's parents as couples.
Sure. Patty Hearst, Mink Stole. Right. That's where they kind of fit in.
There's no single family homes here.
Yeah.
Everybody has someone.
It's
and
all
they're
coupling.
They're worried about what their parents would think, even their dead parents, I guess.
Right. No, they are. That's why Crybaby cries. And that's why she will only let him go to second base over the shirt.
Yeah.
Is second base touching the boob?
I don't fucking know.
That's what the film seemed to have taught me, is that touching a boob is second base.
I feel like at some point in our history we've covered this.
No, I believe we have. I just don't
if
understand.
If you remember where it was, doublefeatureshow@gmail.com, because I forget.
Bases confuse me. Boob should be like first base. It should be like
I'm
leaning off.
I'm going to send you our episode where we solved this. We probably didn't solve it back then. It's probably exactly what you're saying right now. I love the totally unnecessary backstories about their parents.
Yeah.
Took two planes for safety, or that electricity makes him crazy.
Yeah.
Electricity killed my parents. It fucking rips open his shirt and has the electric chair, which is no more absurd than having a cross around your neck. Just
no,
two different execution devices.
It's very true.
If you're going to get a fucking religious tattoo on your chest, you go the Danny Trejo route. I think that's what you have to do. Now you tell me, because I think that there's an entire movie just in the Alphabet Bomber.
Yeah,
that could be a film, right?
Maybe.
Why is that not? You would see it right now.
I would see it.
It's 26 vignettes, 5 minutes long by 26 different directors.
I don't know, man. Well, okay, bummer. Yeah, that way, the way you just put it, totally sold me.
I would actually watch any movie divided into 26 parts.
By 26 different directors?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, whether they're,
hell yeah,
whether they're 5 minutes long or it's a season of Fringe,
yeah,
I will watch something in 26 parts. I don't know why that idea is appealing
same
to me,
reason
but it
we've
is.
Done Killapaloozas and now have to keep doing Killapaloozas.
Oh, God. Something I don't watch a lot of is musicals. I think this counts as a musical.
I think it does too. Right? I was thinking that halfway through.
It's, I mean, the music always comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
So they, you know, that just makes it a smart musical. It's fine.
Sure.
They just have to invent gags, they feel. No one spontaneously breaks out into song, but, I mean, he's got a guitar, the radio's on in
the
jailhouse.
There's the one scene where he does spontaneously break out into song, and it's when he hears the radio. And he starts singing.
Well, but
21.
That's what I mean is there's at least background music on the radio.
Sure.
I think the one scene that might count is Please, Mr. Jailer.
Yeah.
You know, but it's still, it's outside. They're trying to get a tent. They could be singing a song.
Who knows?
It has to be hard to keep in character in that scene.
Yeah.
They go back into the prison and it's supposed to be a bunch of melancholy prisoners, but they're singing this funny song.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a bunch of melancholy prisoners. That's the awesome part.
Yeah.
And they have to go in on set that day and lip sync the song and no one can go, wow, this is fucking ridiculous. That song also gets kind of hot at the end.
Oh yeah.
Where the women come in.
Yeah.
I love chair routines. I don't know why that's a fucking thing.
Sure.
I'm discovering is amazing. Even when John Waters does it.
Just himself.
Right. Right. John Waters doing a chair routine or filming, you know, attractive people doing a chair routine. I'll take either one.
I like the
fine.
First one a lot. That'd be my alphabet bomber vignette for C.
God. So it's adapted. This one was adapted for a stage musical
was
as
it?
Well. Yeah. Just like Hairspray. It hasn't made it full circle yet, but
yet.
I have my fingers crossed for a remake of the, an adaptation of the adaptation, I guess.
Do you think Johnny Depp will play Hatchet Face?
I just hope they have another courtroom scene, because God knows I can't get enough of those. This might be the most ridiculous one yet, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, of the courtroom scenes.
There's an iron lung.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Woman in an iron lung. It's does have a point, though. I mean, taxes on the very cigarette she's trying to smoke pay for the institution. Not bringing libertarian politics into the crybaby episode of Double Feature. Those same taxes pay for 3D glasses, I guess, in the prison.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Who knows where that money goes? 3D glasses on a black and white film, by the way.
Yeah.
Pretty sure that's not possible.
No, it is.
Especially
not
with the color vision.
Impossible. Yeah.
With Do you think they had smell-o-vision in that?
Probably.
Odorama in the in the prison when they watched that? Can we talk about the build of this fucking prison for just a second?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Something that drives me nuts. Oh,
okay.
You know. Oh, you know. Because there's been entire films based around the premise of you're stuck in prison. You're in the hole. And you're in solitary confinement. How do you get out? Entire films, Michael, have been spent on how do we break out of the... That was fucking Shawshank Redemption, right? Vast majority of that film were inside. Someday, maybe we'll get out. Turns out you could just use the manhole.
Well,
the,
you'd think that, except he doesn't actually get out.
Yeah, I guess
he never
that's
gets
true.
Out. He just ends up in another room, and then all the guards think it's hilarious. Maybe they leave it loose because they know that there's no getting out through that sewer grate.
All right, I guess
it's just
I could
rats
see that.
And bones.
Right, right. It does seem like, I mean, you had to, you know, as he's writing that scene, he has to kind of be laughing to himself.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, how does he get it? Well, I don't know. I guess there's a manhole.
Yeah.
It does say on the outside they call it the hole, so they could be talking about the manhole inside. That's feasible.
The manhole inside. That's the title of a film somewhere.
Title of another John Waters film is what it is. Didn't talk about the kids in the pet store, or the pet store of children, and didn't talk about, much like Polyester, we have the unconventional phone conversation bubbles.
Yeah.
Here we have wavy dream bubbles.
Yeah, perfect.
Outside of that, I feel like...
I think you feel like some road racing.
I do. I really do. There's this movie, right? It's called Road Racers. Now it's a movie.
It's a made-for-TV movie.
It used to be fucking nothing, and now it's a movie. There's a book, right? It's I think it's called Road Racers, The Making of a Degenerate Hot Rod Flick.
Yeah.
Online, this thing sells used for $75 or something.
Yeah.
I do not have a copy of this Robert Rodriguez book. Doublefeatureshow@gmail.com. If perhaps you've tripped over one and would like to send it to us, you would be my favorite fucking listener of all time. Favorite one. especially if I got like a nude Polaroid bookmark to put in there.
Yeah.
Okay, point was that the film used to be as rare as this goddamn book.
Yeah.
You could not find this thing anywhere. I had a copy from a bad VHS tape, and until today, actually, that's the only way I'd ever seen the film.
Yeah.
Well, over and over, shitty VHS tape.
I was walking into a Best Buy for, I think one of my friends was looking at video games, which is something that Best Buy is still legitimate for, apparently.
Yeah, maybe.
Arguably.
Unless you want to save $15 and buy it on Amazon, well, but that's
but
fine.
But if you want it the day of, man.
On Amazon, you can pre-order it.
I guess that's true.
We also have a link to Amazon on the website where you can order this Road Racers DVD.
Yeah.
Bringing it right back.
Well, but that's what I saw it at Best Buy. I got it for $5.
Wow. Yeah. Nice.
It was in a $5 bin.
Yeah, Road Racers for $5.
I picked it up and I said, Road Racers, weird. They made another This Is That movie.
Yeah, right.
I need to buy this.
Well, but then you paid Chicago tax, so it was actually $15.
It was $15.50.
My God, fucking hate Chicago tax. So produced by Halloween's Deborah Hill.
Uh-huh.
This is for Showtime's Rebel Highway series. It had, I think it had $1 million budget or used $1 million. They gave them, you know, $1.3 million or something. And it took less than 2 weeks to make this thing. And this was in a series. Yeah, you're pretty much right. Made for TV movie. That's essentially what this is. Mm-hmm. It's part of this Rebel Highway series that Showtime did, where they had a bunch of famous directors come in and each direct a movie.
Weren't they all named after books?
I think they were named. Yeah, I don't know what they were named
Or were they all named after like old school exploitation movies that disappeared?
I think that might be. Well, I remember the conceptual pitch was, let's take some B-movie glory kind of give it a 90s edge.
Yeah.
But they were named after weird things, too.
I think it was named after like pulp novels and old exploitation movies that had cool titles.
We should know more about this series. Yeah. Do you know who directed these other movies?
I read through it. Didn't Joe Dante do one?
Joe Dante did one. Yeah. We have the director from Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer did one. Director from Rock'n'Roll High School did one.
No way, Alan Arkush.
Director from The Exorcist. And then the first one to come out was to be done by Wes Craven.
That's right. I did read that.
Wes Craven went off to do A New Nightmare.
Uh-huh.
Thankfully, for the first time ever, Wes Craven did A New Nightmare. I will never say that again. And instead, we get Robert Rodriguez. So that would make this pretty much the oldest Rodriguez movie we've ever covered.
Yeah, well, there's only one older, and then Bedhead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Year 12 of Double Feature will be opening with Bedhead.
The only shorts year?
Yeah, right.
Year 12, we do exclusively short films.
No, I think by year 12, that'll have been...
Yeah.
If we make it to a year 12, it'll be solely because we only films under 10 minutes.
Second half of year 5, only short films.
Oh, God. We're going to be, what, 50 by the time year 12? Is that how that math works? Oh, Jesus. So, I mean, I see a lot of his later work in this. I see mariachi and stuff in here, too, but... By end stuff, I mean Bedhead. I see mariachi and Bedhead in here. That's just a lie at that point. I see some mariachi stuff, but I see, you know, the older stuff. I see, you think about like the stage song, you know, opening on that stage song. That's that moment from Desperado.
Yeah.
That's clearly plucked out and I mean, Rodriguez is a resourceful guy. He knows they made this movie for TV. No one's seeing this movie.
Yeah.
Let's take some of these good ideas and let's chuck them in other things. JT comes back and, you know, in Planet Terror.
It's just, I mean, this film is a testament to his horrible naming skills.
It is.
His horrible, wonderful naming skills.
Yeah, the dude.
Yeah,
right?
Rock and roller.
Oh, God. There's also a lot of sex in while playing guitar.
There's more sex while playing guitar than I think I've ever seen in a film.
Yeah, well, unless you've seen Desperado and then...
That's true.
Another protagonist playing guitar, too, aside from
Selma Hayek.
Yeah, right, the Selma Hayek. A lot of... scenes around the bar, too. Yeah.
Though this is the first time Selma Hayek has gotten fucked in a film. American film.
Thanks for that clarification.
Sorry, I had to specify. We don't like foreign movies on Double Feature, so I'm completely unfamiliar with her non-English talky work.
That's sarcasm for our foreign listeners who don't understand sarcasm. Wow, sorry, I can't say anything
you
nice.
You just backhand
dude.
Racist.
I know. I know, do you like that? The
you just
entire
backhand
globe.
Racisted art.
No, it's not racism if you do it to everyone but white people.
Only
if you single out. This is, again, sarcasm. Sure. So much trouble.
White people have it pretty rough, man. Racism's a hard thing to deal with.
Oh, God. So what I was saying was there's a lot of scenes in bars. I don't know why I was pointing that out. Desperado, I think.
Yeah.
you know,
bars
you,
and diners, which is my favorite place. You have jazz clubs. That's, I know that's your thing.
Yeah, right.
I wish every movie just took place as a conversation in a diner.
If I think about it like Twin Peaks, if you get me some fucking black coffee and pie, the little Splenda in there, I am a pussy. I will totally show up at a diner at any point.
Basically, I want every film to actually just be a recount of the events of the film between the two surviving people in the film at a diner, and then depending on their relationship, which you find out by the end of their dialogue,
sure.
They stand up and shoot each other,
sure.
They make out, one walks out, a car pulls up and everything goes black, you know, various and sundry.
Sure. Well, pie and sucralose put aside for a moment. I also want to talk about David Arquette.
Oh my God.
We've said before that Robert Rodriguez, in his treasure trove of fucking skills, can make anyone look boss. And
apparently make them a good actor.
Yeah,
I guess all it takes for David Arquette to be a good actor is to have him smoke regular cigarettes instead of those funny cigarettes. And he is smoking the entire time, and that does not detract from how fucking badass.
Except when
he
he's
looks.
Lighting a cigarette.
That's true.
Or attempting
trying to throw it in his mouth.
Yeah, light a cigarette. He's heavy and brooding the entire film.
So good.
And he's really never looked like more of a badass. Would never look like more of a badass.
You didn't think he looked
again.
Like a badass in Eight Legged Freaks? Did you see The Tripper, by the way, the slasher film he directed?
David Arquette directed?
Yeah.
No, I didn't even know about
this.
You
should check it out. It's pretty good.
The Tripper. Yeah. David Arquette, and then Selma Hayek also went to directing too.
Yeah.
This is far before that. You mentioned, first U.S. film.
Yeah.
This was actually her first time in an American film. And, you know, not a huge film to start with, but immediately did Desperado after
sure.
this. So if this wasn't, you know, Rodriguez loves to talk about how he introduced the United States to Selma Hayek.
Right.
He was the one that paired up that love affair.
Sure.
And so if that wasn't Road Racers, it was Desperado. He gets double credit. No mm-hmm. one can attempt to steal that from him. She was working in his movies for, you know, the first three or four of
yeah.
them before she really
got a hit her stride and did Puss in Boots.
Yeah, no. That was, 20 years later or something?
Yeah.
10 years later? Yeah, 20 years. We also have the Link Wray song Rumble. Before Tarantino would use it
sure.
at Jackrabbit Slim's
uh-huh.
in Pulp Fiction.
Is Link Wray L. Wray?
Yeah, right. No. I think that's generic enough that there's probably no connection there. But maybe. I don't know. What do I know? I do know that this is Rodriguez just checking off the boxes before
yeah.
these things ventured
sure.
out into other space. It's also a movie that's very much, you know, especially in his early days, I think it's still true now, but he's just obsessed with movies.
Oh, yeah.
Much like Tarantino.
Yeah.
Just loves movies, loves action stuff. This is his, you know, his fucking love letter to Invasion of the Body
yeah.
Snatchers. A movie that starts at 9, but really starts at 9:10.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, think about that, you know, that cult movie love. He has to get in. Ah, but there's trailers. You
yeah.
want to see the trailers. There's three of them. And a newsreel, even.
Yeah.
Rodriguez even loves fucking newsreels.
Yeah.
That's how much he's just a cinema guy.
Also, before we move too far away from the people involved in the film, I want to mention John Hawks, who plays
yeah.
Nixer.
Who is John Hawks?
John Hawks, we saw him on the show in Me and You and Everyone We Know.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And also as the clerk who didn't say help us in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Sure, right.
But he's been in a lot of
he's
a
in
lot
Deadwood,
of films,
right?
He's great in Deadwood.
Sure, sure.
But he's a really solid character actor. He does a lot of artistic roles. Me and You and Everyone We Know is very characteristic of the type of roles
sure.
he plays.
You can't just throw out a word like artistic, though. So what
right.
does that mean?
Well, I mean, he does a lot of, I guess, indie type, a lot of...
artsy films.
Yeah, so, I guess artsy.
So that is what you mean.
But he lends that same element to Road Racers.
Yeah.
Because he's sitting there with the fucking fry
yeah.
on the toothpick.
Yeah.
Doing his John Hawks thing.
Sure.
That's
sure.
a John Hawks spiel. Like, that's where he lives
right,
in
right.
the cinema world.
Where it gets profound for a few minutes.
Yeah. And he's
it feels
so
natural,
good.
Though, because he's a crazy kid.
Yeah. And he's so good in this film.
He brings along a lot of those Invasion of the Body
yeah.
Snatchers points.
Yeah. The Invasion of Body Snatchers thing. And again, we have no fucking idea what we're ever talking about, but I believe that the whole thing is kind of a commentary on almost what we did last year with Glengarry Glen Ross and Shaun of the Dead. It's kind of a commentary on people not ever getting out of the world right. that they're in, and them just being surrounded and trapped by these people who aren't even really people anymore.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a testament to rebellion against all there is, to go back to Hellride. I mean, it ends up climaxing when he finds out that they're lip syncing at the last night at the bar.
Sure.
And he freaks out and says, there's a record playing in here. It's starting or something like
yeah,
that.
Right,
and,
right.
And he's just paranoid.
Pod
and
people,
he's,
man. It's yeah, pod people.
And he's so hooked on the idea of not giving in to this society that when dude leaves, he feels like he's lost. He feels yeah. like the last non-pod person is sure. leaving town, and he's left to fend for himself. He says, if there's not some kind of, what is it? Not some kind, basically fighting. If there's not yeah. some kind of misbehaving, I don't know what to do. I
sure.
go crazy.
Right, right.
And that's him latching on to the counterculture. That's yeah. him latching on to going against the norm.
Sure.
But he can't perform that. He's not that guy. He just likes knowing it's there so that he doesn't feel like the world is lost.
Yeah, you know, the main characters want an escape plan.
Yeah.
That's why they sort of latch onto that band. That's Selma Hayek's character. You know, that's her big plan mm-hmm. is, hey, what about these guys? Have you seen this over here? That could be our ticket out. It's also way Cemetery Junction.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah.
That's what we were talking about there, is just being stuck in this one place, left to die there. Born, lived, died. One fucking spot. And kind of wondering, isn't there anything more to your life? Are you ever going to get out of this town? It gets heavy, not even the metaphor of the French fry, but then literally JT brings it down even more.
Mm-hmm.
You think he's going to do something funny, dip the French fry, eat it, but he's fucking dipping that fry, talking about, actually, you're going to die probably in that seat, probably eating my burger. Not even probably. You
yeah.
will die in that seat eating my burger.
Yeah.
You're never going to leave or amount to anything, is basically what he's saying. And it's terrifying having not only no legacy, but not even really living a life
yeah.
at all. And so that's pod people. That's all these people in this town of a variety of ages. They're there at a variety of ages because they've all accepted that that's just where they live
mm-hmm.
and that's it. And that's all there is to it. And they're satisfied. Our main characters want to get out of there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the message that's being accomplished with this script. And it's a very sort of... I mean, you see similar threads in other Rodriguez movies, but I think there's other things in the writing that kind of give away, you know, where you see his hand. He mm-hmm. wrote this with Tommy Nix, who shows up in the movie. I think he's a drummer in one of the scenes.
Yeah. He was also the one of the doctors in Planet Terror.
Yeah, for sure.
That points at the skull that's been hollowed out.
He's got parts in a lot of Rodriguez
oh,
movies.
Oh, yeah, you're right. He's all over.
You know, he was a classmate or something, or Rodriguez's. So he shows up. He's one of, you know, the guy's friends that shows up in all these movies. But you also see a movie that's written a lot around icons. Has the sort of mariachi humor
yeah.
of, you know, like using the hair grease to slick the, mm-hmm. the fucking roller rink. The idea at the time when Rodriguez wrote his other book, Rebel Without a Crew, one that is available and that I have read, he talks a lot about the way he keeps his budget super low, only 7,000 on mariachi compared to a million here, but still,
right.
you know, has that mindset of, I want to accomplish as much as I can with my tiny budget. So, you know, trying to stretch that out as much as you can, you come up with these icons, you work backwards. You go, what do I have access to? And so in mariachi, that was huge. And maybe we'll talk about that one day when we finally figure out what the hell to do about mariachi. But, you know, oh, we got access to a car. We know the local, police or whatever. Mm-hmm. We have a guitar case. How do we build a movie out of the stuff we have? And so with Road Racers, yeah, you have a guitar and, you know, you can exploit cars, I guess, because that's kind of what Showtime's around for. That shouldn't be too hard. You have that matte black Chevy from Tulane Blacktop.
Yeah, the Tulane Blacktop 55.
Fucking great. But also the grease. I mean, that's an easy thing.
You know? Yeah.
So we're going to make a movie about greasers. Let's exploit the grease. Let's make that a thing. So, you know, you see that as part of the style. You see him greasing his hair. There's a whole fucking scene of that.
Mm-hmm.
You see him later make the joke of greasing the roller rink
yeah.
out of the hair. You're exploiting an item you have. Even with his wider access and budget than Mariachi and, you know, these earlier films he did, that mindset stayed with him throughout all his work.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that again in, Cherry Darling from, mentioned Planet Terror. She has a gun for a leg. Everything in that movie is about having a fucking gun for a leg. It's on the poster. It's the icon. It's the movie that has a chick with a gun for a leg.
Sure. You'd know that probably before Planet Terror.
Yeah. But then there's also, Machete. I don't even need to say anything about that, right? Or is short, The Misbehaviors.
Yeah.
You know, just so iconic. That's titular. It's what it's about. It's high concept. And that drives everything in it. Oh, what was that one called? Oh, The Misbehaviors.
Yeah.
I mean, his movies are built for festivals.
Sure.
Oh, I went and saw a bunch of things. What was that one called? Bedhead. It was about the girl. She's got the crazy hair, weird powers. Bedhead. But, and maybe this is just because I'm a fan of his stuff. I've seen a lot of his work. I feel like you can identify it by the editing, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? There's this sort of knife scene, right?
Yeah.
Early on, knife, shoe, cleaver.
Yeah.
And then there's a little bit of quippy dialogue, and then bam, cleaver out.
Yep.
It's cut together. I mean, it's essentially a Mexican standoff.
Yeah.
There's tons of those in this movie. The scenes he shoots later of, you know, the car, I mean, smoking and the car, all the car driving stuff, but especially at the very, very end when it sombers down a bit, it's Sin City.
Yeah.
It looks the same way when people have their hair slicked back and they're smoking, driving around Sin City. You know, that hasn't changed a bit. Except earlier in that scene, stylistically, he's just bloody and it's a fucking bat out of hell scene.
Mm-hmm.
I love just how frenetic and crazy that is.
Yeah.
The fucking fiery look in his eyes. It's one of the things that makes David Arquette look like a badass in this movie.
So this was actually the last Robert Rodriguez movie I'd seen. I hadn't seen it till I bought it on DVD.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. So recently.
Very recently.
Oh, that's cool.
And I remember you mentioning having seen it and we were going to watch it. And then one or both of us simultaneously forgot. And I asked you how it was. You said, yeah, it's good. But when I went and finally watched it, it's like one of the best ones.
So this is maybe one of your favorite Rodriguez
movies.
Well,
I mean, think about it. Robert Rodriguez, who is easily like my top three directors,
sure,
makes a movie about fast cars.
Yeah, right.
And I finally see that one.
Well, I saw it. The first time I saw it was way before the roadsploitation stuff. And you'll have to forgive me. I would have harped on you. I thought you had seen it.
Yeah, I just spaced and then I kind of gave up. And
well, there's a lot of movies.
Vroom, vroom, chop, chop. There are.
Yeah, right. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff to get to. That list just keeps increasing of stuff you promised yourself you'd see. Yeah, it just had this glorious DVD release after not coming out for so long. Now, and the DVD is great. It's got a commentary on it. He totally retimed the color. That's, what does that phrase even mean? Sorry, that's it's like film jargon that I just slipped into. Yeah. I don't know what the fuck happened. He made the color look good, right?
Uh-huh.
It's digitally remastered, recolored, I guess. I don't even know if it's fully recolored. Yeah. I think they just worked on it. You can actually see it in widescreen now. Even though up to this point it was always, I mean, I only had the one bootleg. I don't know if other stuff leaked out over time. It was released, at least for a little while, in another country on DVD. So here we have this really clean copy. You can get it in high definition. There's not only a commentary on it,
there's a film school.
Another Robert Rodriguez 10-minute film school. So if you haven't seen Road Racers up to this point, I mean, there's basically never been a better time to check this movie out. We will be looking at two more movies on the show next week.
That's right.
But before then, there's more housekeeping to do.
You mean doublefeatureshow.com?
That's a place you can go, yeah.
And doublefeatureshow@gmail.com?
You can go on the website, and if you buy Road Racers through our website, we get probably about 5 cents out of that.
Oh, my God.
But if enough people do it, we could have $1.
$1.
Yeah, we could. I like how we both realize what would be the most obtainable
fucking
goal.
$1, I believe.
We said, what was the most obtainable goal?
Yeah.
60 cents. Let's round that up. $1.
Yeah.
Great. What are we doing next time on the
show? Next time we're going to do we're going to do an actual Splat Pack director and our honorary nomination for new Splat Pack director.
Sure, great.
We're going to do Rogue, which is Greg McLean.
Love it. We did his movie
Wolf Creek.
Great.
The Australian Splat Pack director.
Yeah, that was right.
And then we're going to do the new Ty West film, The Innkeepers. Oh, Ty West of Cabin Fever 2 and House of the Devil fame.
Which were both fantastic movies, so I assume we are in for a good time.
Gotta be good. So watch more fucking film.
Bye.